Welcome back to Switchcast Season 5. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders, checking the cameras, making sure our Sheffield watches are in view. We're the automotive news and entertainment show that's not just for car people. And it is produced, of course, by Ethan Huffnagel. And some say that revenge is a dish best served cold. Well, we believe that's true with the news. We're never the first to report, but we usually have more to cover, or at least more snark.
Yeah, we got to give it time to percolate, you know, come up with some stuff.
Yes, yeah. Got to brood on it a while.
Hey, sure, man.
Yeah. Speaking of puns, a long time ago, early ages of the podcast, early eras, we do an automotive joke of the week. We had the punch, we had the little drum and stuff like that. So I thought, like, I come up with my own jokes.
Uh-huh.
I thought maybe this would be a good place to test out new jokes every week. That could be a new segment, at least on the warm-up lap.
Ethan, what's the saying? OP finna get dragged?
I just want to know if this is your testing area, where are they going after this?
You know, you never know when, and this actually sort of happened to me, when you're just going to get called up and given a mic and said, tell jokes, like make people laugh. That happened to me recently. The only problem was it was in a very very like niche group of people.
Yeah.
With a lot of sensitivities from real life, not like they were just easily triggered. Like it was just, I couldn't tell 90% of my jokes. And so I told one good one and then I told another one that was like a musician joke and it completely bombed because nobody got it at all. And I was just like, crap. All of my planning, writing down my jokes, preparing for this moment where Aaron always made fun of me. When are you going to just get like called up on stage and try, you have to tell jokes? I'm like, you never know. And it happened.
You never know.
I tell you, I could never be a comedian though. Cause if I told a joke and it bombed and you could just like feel that thickness in the room, I would just want to like collapse in on myself like a star and just like cease to exist.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is a great place to try out these jokes in case you ever get called up in front of a niche group of people again.
You mean like the podcast audience?
Because like a lot of my jokes, you could tell to almost anybody except this group of people I was in front of. I'm looking through. I'm like, nope, 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 nope. That won't go over.
How do we get here?
Have you guys ever had Sambuca?
Sambuca? Negative. No, I don't believe so.
It's liquor-ish. No? Okay. All right. I like that one, actually.
You feel that, Doug? You feel the thickness?
Is this thing on?
How about my one from earlier? when Michelangelo painted the Sistine Chapel, it was more than a ceiling.
That one's a good one.
That one's fantastic. That made me laugh.
Yeah.
I laughed on my way up the stairs.
Chuckle. All right. Let's see. Continuing our warm-up lap. We're following up on things that we've talked about before. Last week, we talked about the second chance offer scam and how that person's information got to the scammer.
Yeah.
We weren't sure, but we had some ideas on maybe how. One commenter opined that the victim could have had a virus or malware on his computer and they were essentially, or they had like hacked into his computer and were tracking what he was doing. And so therefore, like obviously had his email address, but knew what he was bidding on and stuff like that.
My only problem with that is still so specific. Like I'm not a hacker, but I would imagine you would want to cast a wide net to, you know, have as many potential fish take your bait, but that is such a specific thing.
Right.
It almost worked, I think.
No, it didn't. Totally.
Oh, that's right. Cause he gave him, I forget what we talk about.
No, it didn't,
the week after,
didn't work.
But that almost feels like just a waste of time for the scammer.
Yeah.
So that's so wild. However it happened, it was so specific that I'm kind of amazed that it happened.
Yeah. Also we spent a lot of time knocking on, bad truckers.
Mm.
And I will say that I had an example from today. Well, two examples this week. One, I was trying to find a cheap transport for a friend, Ed Bullion, who ships cheap cars. Doesn't care about using shady truckers. But the first trucker that called, when I did my due diligence, I'm like, this car is going to get stolen.
Oh, yikes.
But he was like, wow, it's only a $1,500 car. I'm kind of willing to sacrifice it for the story, but it had to actually get there for filming for Car Trek. So we couldn't do it for this one. Otherwise, he was totally willing to have it be the sacrificial lamb for a good story. So we got the name of the company that is likely a scam, and we're going to set them up with another cheap car, courtesy of Ed.
Nice.
For the story.
The Ed Bolian way.
But not all shady truckers are bad truckers. I actually ran into one of those today, and I get a lot of flack on social media for giving truckers flack based on their appearances, and not all guys that don't have brand new equipment, like, they can still be good truckers, right? Well-used equipment, saving money, fine. But I'm really pointing out the fact that they're heavily damaged and not properly licensed and those types of things. But a trucker showed up today, could barely speak any English, common denominator, did not have a bill of lading.
Nice.
And when I asked him about stuff, he like put me into Google Translate to try to get it. But yeah, so he didn't have a bill of lading. When I asked him the company name, he wasn't sure. He had to like go through his list of documents for all the different companies he ships for. Or ships under, right? Not shipping for, but like, and the company name that he showed me on his phone was not the same as the piece of paper taped to his back window company name.
Nice.
Standard operating procedure for these bottom feeder truckers. However, everything checked out. I called, it was a cheap Suburban. I called my buddy who arranged the shipping and he's like, yep, it's fine. Like, yep, we're good. And the trucker himself was super nice. He was all smiles, which is rare. Like he couldn't stop smiling. He was always smiling, shook my hand when we left. Thank you. And he was young, and his young pregnant wife, lady, whatever, was helping him like strap down the cars and all that. I was like,
whoa,
man, you got her working.
Holy heck.
But in that moment, I felt really bad for trashing all of the other hardworking truckers that are, you know, skirting the rules just to make a buck. And I was like, this is a really nice guy and he's trying hard and he's doing a good job. Also breaking laws, but
but so you have finally experienced what I think everybody on the internet thinks every single one of these situations is.
Yes.
Maybe potentially,
yes.
It felt,
but it was very much the exception.
Yes,
yeah.
I think if that should go to show that, like, yes, those folks do exist, but that doesn't mean they have to be the norm.
And I guess they probably just think this is how the world works. Like, I ship under 18 different companies. What's the big deal?
Well, look at that. You had a positive experience.
I did.
Sort of.
I did. Yeah. So main topic number one, found a wonderful article it was on the Wall Street Journal, but I had to pay to get that. So the same article was on realtor.com for free. And it's about people and their garage mahals, which I have finally. It's like a car guy achievement, although I call it my outlaw suite.
I love the name. I don't want to just ignore that. Fantastic name. I just realized why they're called garage mahals, and I'm embarrassed. Isn't it like a reference to like the Taj Mahal
moment for Tyler?
I've never heard them called garage mahals before seeing this article. Is it a reference like the Taj Mahal, like a palace?
Yes, there was actually a big time collector in Columbus who died 10 years ago, maybe, big time Porsche collector. And he called his the Taj Garage.
That one doesn't roll off the tongue, but he was workshopping. You know, lots of people have come up with this.
Yeah.
Who never told me before today.
Yeah. They actually had so many significant Porsches, they held an auction just there.
Oh, really?
His garage for all the memorabilia and cars and stuff like
that.
Some really significant cars. Yeah.
Anyway, back to our program, normally scheduled programming.
Well, it is about garage mahal. So, right? Like, we see them everywhere. People are building bigger and bigger, ginormous things for their RVs, for their cars. There's complexes that do this in industrial areas, car condos. People are spending sometimes millions of dollars just on their garage to house sometimes their less expensive cars, which that math doesn't math to me. I feel like the cars should be the most expensive part of it, but whatever. It's like spending more on a, you know, frame than the piece of artwork itself. But
well, but the article goes into this. I'm sure it's a posturing thing to host all your friends over and, you know, have them see this cool thing that's
sure,
like crazy.
But ultimately, you know, it's to see the cars, I think.
I would argue that to an extent, yes, but I think this is big enough now where it's starting to lose that and it's becoming a, like, wealth posture.
I think everything in cars is a wealth posture at this point.
Well, for
the, but not everything, but like the paint to sample, we've talked about that ad nauseum, and even the cars and coffee, right? It's a lot of clout chasing, a lot of posturing, a lot of look at what I have, not necessarily in the best way.
That's very true.
But while these mostly are seen as positive with car guys, neighbors don't seem to love them. Now, when we bought our house, I made sure we did not move to an HOA because I'm like, one, it probably won't have a big enough detached garage. And if it doesn't, I can't build one, right? Because I got to get permission from my neighbors. So we didn't. But neighbors can petition. They can go to city council. They can file lawsuits. And a lot of people have filed lawsuits either against city council because they believe that they granted permission for these garage mahals to be built in violation of city code or zoning or environmental laws, or they filed lawsuits against the homeowners themselves, which, man, talk about bad neighbor relations.
Yeah, seriously. No, not going over to ask for a cup of sugar anymore. Hoop, nobody.
Yeah. Well, when we first moved in, I think I had a car event at my outlaw suite. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Very shortly, and one of the neighbors was like, "Oh, running a Porsche dealership here?" And I didn't realize that he was sarcastic.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh crap, I found the one neighbor that's going to give me a hard time the whole time." And turns out, like, they're great people. He's super hilarious, super sarcastic. He was just giving me a fun hard time. But some people, especially Minnesota is what this article targets, have been sued. Because, man, these places are an eyesore to some people. Even though they're built to high architectural standards, they're typically beautiful. They cost millions and millions of dollars.
Well, and I would like to point out, too, that a lot of the ones I see, and especially the ones in this article, are like, this isn't a barn. This isn't even like a normal, like, metal, like sheet metal pole barn. These are like, it looks like a house that happens to have a garage door or five on it.
Correct.
Like, it's a living space practically.
Correct. Yeah. So in Victoria, Minnesota, specifically near the Twin Cities, a bunch of neighbors signed a petition to reverse city approval for a 5-bedroom house with a 6K square foot garage. And there's a picture of this extremely angry looking
dude,
male Karen.
I love this guy.
led the complaints. He says, quote, "I can't describe it any other way than it looks like having a Tires Plus in my backyard."
Which, like, what? I do know he definitely posed for this and wanted to wear all black so he looked more intimidating. 100%.
And of course, there's technicalities here, right? The crux of the debate is whether the garage is freestanding, which would limit its size under city rules, or attached by means of a covered walkway. Now, that's a technicality there. And the article says that one Iowa court saw such contrivances as a clear effort to circumvent, frustrate, and subterfuge applicable zoning ordinances. But the Planning Commission did reject the appeal. Now, I don't see that as a clear effort to circumvent. That's what they call a loophole.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if it is technically correct according to zoning, then it's like, well, that's technically correct.
It's the worst kind of correct.
You could change the law later. Like, that's all race, quote unquote, cheating and racing is. It's always legal.
Yeah.
Until they get caught. And then they go, well, that's cheating. Well, no, it's not, because here is like the technical rule that we didn't violate. And so then they make a new rule that's makes whatever they did cheating.
Well, it's like, I just had to look this up, but I think it's Ross Chastain in NASCAR when he did like the wall ride that we all did playing Need for Speed and stuff, or like Gran Turismo, and they like couldn't find a rule that made it illegal. So then they're like, okay, new rule.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, that's like potentially really dangerous, but still, like, it was, they had to give it to him that time.
A friend of mine, Arnie, went through the same thing, with a neighbor. He built a giant box attached to his house. I think his garage is twice the size of his house, twice the height, definitely. And I mean, there's no view that he's blocking, right? He's in a subdivision, whatever, and they're all fairly big houses. Some of them have big attached garages as well. But one of the neighbors was ticked off and complained to the city while he was building it, and kept trying to send inspectors over and stuff like that, because he said he was violating code. But because it was attached to his house, there was no limit on the size.
Nice.
So Arnie's like, hey, it's legal.
Yeah.
I can do it. But his neighbor didn't like it. And but I love this. So there's different reactions from different mayors and judges in here that I think is telling of their political leanings / values. So the Victoria mayor, of this first one, with a 6,000 square foot garage that, the appeal got struck down and the builder was allowed to build it. She says, quote, I know that the neighbors are not happy about it and I sympathize with them, but you can't arbitrarily deny something because somebody doesn't like it.
100%.
I love that. She's essentially saying, I don't like it, but hey, it's legal, so I can't change the law or force something upon somebody because it's not legal. Now, contrast that with this 24-year-old kid, yes, I'll say that, who's the mayor of Cross Lake, Minnesota, and in an industrial area, like a commercial area, which is not known for, like, they don't have architectural standards in commercial areas, but people started putting personal storage condos in commercial areas, and a developer cut down a swath of pine trees on the main road into town. And this 24-year-old mayor says, quote, once the trees started falling down, that's when the issue really started.
Hmm.
Okay. Well, change the zoning. It's a friggin' commercial area. Like,
yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I also get upset when trees start coming down, but to an extent, like, again, if it's zoned for industrial, pretty sure you can do that.
Yep. Yes, you can. And then there was a judge in one of these cases that, man, his attitude, I do not like this. So this is also in Twin Cities. This is in Wayzata, which is where some of my car clients live and have storage condos. Let's see. The judge call this thing a garage mahal. It's a 1,600 square foot detached structure, large enough to hold a tour bus style RV and other vehicles. 1,600 square feet is not that big, but the judge thinks it is. He says it's a big deal. Quote, it's not like the little squatty garage I have at the edge of my property where I park my Honda.
That feels like a bit of posturing for...
It's a lot of, yeah, like reverse snobbery.
Yeah, that's...
He had to say Honda to be like, listen, I don't drive a Mercedes. I have a little squatty garage where I park my Honda. I mean, it's the total opposite. And the funny thing is, a picture of this is, it's actually a subterranean garage that like blends in with the landscape and you really can't even see it. Like, when I was looking at the photo, I'm like, I don't get it. I see a retaining wall and some shadows.
Yeah, it's like, it's pretty chill. And I guess, but it's a shared driveway and people don't want to drive, but it's so...
Oh my god.
People have too much time on their hands. I gotta be honest.
Yep. Like, yep.
Get a hobby, please. Or two. I don't know.
Oh my goodness.
Take up Sudoku, get your brain cells rubbing together and working.
Well, all that to say, garage mahals are in high demand. so high demand that people are spending a lot of money on these. And that is, of course, attracting investors and opportunists, real and maybe shady. And we've covered one of those in the past, and we're going to look into another one in our second segment. How's that for a segue? We totally set you up for that.
Leave them on a cliffhanger, Doug.
Oh, yeah. And spoiler alert, I am convinced it is a future scam. It is not a scam yet. It's never a scam until it is,
it's
right?
It's not successful enough yet. Sorry. Ooh, spoilers.
So thinking about this more, what this judge said, it really bothered me because not just because of the like humble brag, the false humility, but a judge's job is to interpret the law and judge justly. I feel like anytime you put your personal feelings or opinion into a judgment, which he totally did, he played his cards there, right? Like the way he said, oh, my little Honda, my tiny little garage, like he has a conflict of interest, in my opinion. He didn't say anything about the law.
Yeah, it was all just, here's how I feel, here's my opinion on stuff. And it's, you know, in that moment, like you said, it's impossible to be impartial if that is how you feel.
Yeah. And granted, they may have like taken that one statement the article, yeah. But the fact that he even said that, instead of just saying, here's the law, here's how it's interpreted, and here's how it applies to this, and my judgment is based on that, and then going back in his quarters and, you know, feeling good about himself because he has a small garage and a court. I'm just like, I feel like he should have recused himself from the judgment just based on that. Like, I don't know. You, as a judge, you can't let your personal biases.
Your personal bias or your personal preference is different from the law or what is legal.
Right.
You know, there's plenty of times I see big lifted pickup trucks and I'm like, that is very unnecessary. I really dislike that. But also some people probably feel that way about my cars, specifically a purple pace car.
Yeah.
So it's just like different people are into different things.
So I get though that like every person still has a political worldview, right?
For sure.
Like there's a reason the Supreme Court has multiple judges, is so that no one judge can apply their worldview on something and change the law for the country. So when they're writing their opinions, they're about the law, but it's still based on their worldview and the lens by which they interpret the law. But nothing about what this judge said was like, here's how I'm interpreting the law based on how I view it. It is literally just, I'm better than these guys because I have a Honda in a small garage.
Yeah.
Total ego move. And not the place for a judge to be doing that. Anyway, with that, let's go to the license plate game. We switched it up to the first segment just for fun. I've got five. You got five?
I got five.
All right, I'll start. Tyler, soft taco.
That's not a 996G with an arrow kit, is
it? Ooh, nice. I see where you went there. No.
Soft taco. I am totally blanking.
It is a somewhat old school Toyota Tacoma.
Nice. Yeah. I like it. I accept. The first one I got for you is Thanks XRP. And I'll give you a hint. XRP is a cryptocurrency.
I was going to go there. Yeah. I feel like it's gotta be one of the clout cars, like a Lamborghini Huracan or something like that.
You're in the right direction.
I did not go out and buy like a Noble M600 with crypto money,
which would be sick. This is a brand new BMW M3 with the big old schnout. So it's like he didn't make enough in XRP to get our account.
Does it have a loan against it? Is he financing it? That would be
amazing.
Well, if he didn't, though, he probably took a loan against it because real crypto bros never cash out. You never sell.
You hodl, bro.
You just leverage.
Yes.
All right. Is it my turn?
Diamond hands. Yes.
This one's probably the best one. We're not going to save it for last. We're just going to go right into it. BRKBOSS. Broke Boss.
It's a Mustang. Boss 302.
No.
Oh.
No. It is a Corvette C7.
Oh, but
here's the greatest part of this. And this is in Macedonia. This is right around the corner. The guy who took the picture waited around to see, because he's like, I wonder if this is like, if the guy's really broke. Sure enough, as he's waiting, as he's pulling away, he sees the repo man driving down the aisle.
What?
The repo man jumps out, checks the van, hooks and books the Corvette.
No.
Tows it away. He has photos of it. Guess who the lien holder is?
Is it Pentagon Federal?
No, it's Carvana. They love selling to the subprime.
Amazing.
So the dude knew it. He was owning it. I got 25% interest on my Corvette from Carvana.
Amazing.
Yep.
All right. Second one for you, Doug. This is nuts for you.
Is it EWE? They really like sheep?
No, it's NUTS for you.
Nuts for you. I don't know. Like a. For you? I don't know. It's somebody expressing their love. It's like a Ford Explorer. Somebody bought it for his wife.
It is the Planter's Nutmobile.
You've been doing this. You've been doing the Bean Boot and the Wiener Mobile. I should have seen this coming.
Oh man, it's so good. Oh, it's so good.
You know, Planters, it's a very complex corporate structure. They have a lot of shell companies. Oh,
do they?
Beneficial ownership filing requirements really got to them.
Oh man. All right, what's next?
It's my turn again. Crap. This should be an easy one. Got to do my quintessential F.
Tesla.
Yes, F oil.
Oh, yeah, Tesla. It's a Model X, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, is it really?
I don't know. I can't tell them apart. Someone might want to tell them how electricity is usually generated, though.
Heck yeah.
Like, maybe F gas would have been better.
They tried. That's okay. They didn't put too much thought into it. A little bit of an easier one. Maybe. Maybe not. Cayenne pepper.
Porsche Cayenne?
Yes.
All right.
An older one, too.
Yeah, nobody that has a new Cayenne, I feel like, is aware of the fact that they have a Cayenne. It's just a luxury SUV.
Yeah, it's an appliance.
Yes. I think a lot of them don't even know what they have, because they'll be like, I have a Porsche Cayman. It's the SUV.
Like, huh? Or,
yeah, whatever. Truckish.
Truckish. The Ford Ranger.
No.
Toyota Tacoma.
No. On the right track.
Is it a K truck?
No.
Or am I going the wrong direction?
Nah, wrong direction. Not that cool. It's a Hyundai Santa Cruz.
Oh, yes. Those look bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Next up for you, Pasta Power.
It's got to be a Ferrari or a Fiat. Oh, shoot. That could be a lot of things. I'm going to go with Ferrari. Ferrari 458.
That would be sweet on a 450. You should do that. No, it's an Alfa Giulia, actually. Okay. Way less creative.
All right. It's
still Italian.
Well, in the Italian vein, I8A4RE. I ate a Ferrari.
Oh, okay. that's a Corvette posturing. It's a C8 of some kind. Really?
Really?
Is it a Porsche?
No.
GT3, okay.
No, and this is from Vanity of Maine, so it's actually surprising
really?
To have one of these up
is
there.
Is this a muscle car?
No, it's a Lamborghini Huracan.
Oh. Interesting.
That apparently ate a Ferrari.
I would expect, I wonder if it gave it indigestion, but I would expect that to be like on something you wouldn't expect to like race against a Ferrari or something. That's where I was going. I didn't expect it to be a Lamborghini.
If it gave it indigestion, that's why the flames come out of the exhaust.
Yeah. It's
the backfiring.
It gets
there.
A little choppy. I guess throw it a check engine light. Last one for me. Money or Mone. M-O-H-N-E. Mone.
It's got to be a Mercedes. All the bragging about money ones we've seen almost have been Mercedes with loans on them.
Very close. It is a brand new BMW 8 Series.
All right.
So, same vein.
In the same vein. Yep. Yep. Awesome. All right. We're getting better at this.
Yes.
We're getting better
at this. The Nutmobile got you, though. Oh, so good. Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles, because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick-themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
I got to take my vest off for this round because I'm going to get worked up. This one may get me in hot water, so I'm going to put my disclaimers at the beginning. All of this is my opinion based on my observations and research on this particular company and these people. I'm not an investment advisor. I'm a wannabe private detective / investigative journalist. This is a editorial piece. Everything is alleged, but I found a lot of stuff that make me believe that this is going to be a scam or will end up being a scam. It may not, that may not be the intentions of the founders. We've talked about this a lot. A lot of people start out with good intentions that if everything goes exactly the way I want it to, and I get all the money I need from my investors, then it'll be great. But if I don't, I've also set this up in such a way that I'll get out with some money and everybody else will lose money. So
we're not talking about the intentions of anybody. This is all alleged. This is all our opinion. Like, but
this is not a scam yet, but I bet you that it will end up as a scam. So I got an ad on Facebook for an investment opportunity, which is the first red flag, right?
All right. Steve, that's all Saline. We need. Yep. That's all we right. need. Case closed.
Okay. But I keep seeing this ad, maybe because I click on it. And we're talking about Garage Mahals here. Big investment opportunity. There's motorsports complexes being built all over the country. Millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars being spent on these places. Rich guys love them. I love them. I can't afford them, but they're cool. However, with that opportunity, there's a lot of opportunists and a lot of people selling maybe some fish oil.
Yeah, selling a dream.
Yeah. Yeah, snake oil, fish oil. I don't know. Fish oil is actually good for you. Snake oil doesn't exist. I don't know. So Gearhead Grotto is the ad that I see come up on Facebook. And if you watch this video, probably because of algorithms and they're listening,
it'll happen to you too.
You're going to see this quote unquote investment opportunity. Right. So where do we start? This one might be a long one because boy, oh boy. I had a lot of fun digging. First of all, okay, so the gist of it is they're selling an investment in this Gearhead Grotto Fund 1, which I think is important because there could be a Fund 2. And it is this $5 billion plus market opportunity. And
well, that's a big number.
It's a very big number. Yeah. I don't know what percent of the market share they'll actually have, but you know, $5 billion. And they're going to be building these Garage Mahals in multiple locations. I think they said they've identified 12 locations around the country that they're going to be building and expanding to, right? Which I can identify 12 locations on a map too by going point, yes. point, point.
They're also pretty sure, I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves here, but they were supposed to break ground over a year ago.
Oh, gee. Oh, man. Okay.
Sorry.
I don't want to get too far ahead either. But if any of you have been listening to this podcast for years, you'll remember Jeff Badger and Club Motor Estates, which was a scam. I said it. I mean it. A scam here locally, which was exactly this. It was a motorsports complex, build to suite garages, custom built everything, blah, 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 community, and total scam. And there's a bunch of red flags I identified. And boy, do we have deja vu all over again.
Whoo!
To use that phrase redundantly. Because, yeah, right? Supposed to break ground last year, haven't yet. So if you go on Gearhead Grotto's website, depending on which website you go to, because one of them is a parked website courtesy of GoDaddy.com, real up on their stuff there. But if you go to GearheadGrotto.com/fund-1, soon to be Fund 2, Fund 3, whatever, you can check out what they are offering. Now, most of the photos on here are either CG, or
oh my god,
they are taken from other dealerships or clubs or something. One of them I found a photo with that was taken from a Delman Sport Wagon, which is an exotic car dealership in Germany.
Oh,
and of course, all the photos of their custom built garages and their spaces and everything is all CG. Totally.
Yeah, there was no real photo of anything that has been built.
Correct. Nothing has been built. Nothing at all. We know that for sure. But there's a lot of fancy words, including a quote from the founder: "The power of desire will forever change the way we invest." Big numbers proposed, like I said, billions of dollars. Their internal rate of return projected is 41.8%. They have this nice little flow chart about how they keep reinvesting your money and earn and profit and all these headlines. And it's all literally just, here's what we think will happen.
And they call out so often that you are supposed to have your full investment back by year three. They've got this whole like 5-year plan of what's going to, and it is brought up repeatedly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Let's see. But in a different Facebook post by one of the founders, Scott Stellman, this was a Facebook post for another company he also is starting under this fund. It's Goldbox Storage. And the website for Goldbox Storage is literally just one single page. And literally the page title is ClickFunnels landing page.
Nice.
Yeah. He did not hire Semdeck to do his site design. On this Facebook post, he advertises 10x returns. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So all of this is under a company called Trestle Financial, right? A private equity firm, real estate fund management, and they're doing luxury man cave garages and apparently gold storage as well.
I got to tell you, Doug, before you get even further into this, the amount of
worked up
buzzwords and investment things is, it makes me sleepy. All these pages, all of this return, that return, open a passion investment return. Brr.
There are a lot of buzzwords.
It's intense. It's all it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue.
There's a book written by John Warshawski, who's a car guy, called Why Business People Speak Like Idiots. Brilliant book. Yeah. Some of these would-be scammers would do well to read that. Anyway, so a big selling point. We don't need to go into all that. Check it out yourself. It's maddening reading it. But okay, so the point about the Gearhead Grotto Fund, one, here's why it's important. When we were covering Steve Saleen and his Facebook capital raise, we learned, because we're amateurs when it comes to this high-level M&A and investing stuff, blah, 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 like we're just covering it as we see it from a layman's perspective, because really that's who they're trying to get invest. We learned that whatever the minimum amount you file with the SEC for a round of funding, once that amount has been raised, not the maximum amount, but the minimum, and I think in Celine's case, it was $10,000, the round of funding is considered complete and therefore is like a valid investment round. And so you're not required to return the funds to the investors because it wasn't.
Oh,
so
yes.
Like if you say the minimum is 10K and the maximum is 10 million, if you raise $11,000, the people who invested cannot expect to get their money back.
Yes.
So that's why red flag here. I see Gearhead Grotto Fund 1. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, if they're planning to scam people, if this is not really a legitimate operation, or they're saying this is our contingency plan,
yeah,
is if this doesn't work, we're still going to take the money. Not saying that's their plan. Ew. I'm just saying this is what I'm observing. So when I get a letter from their legal team, anticipating it already, although I don't know. Speaking of their team, okay, they talk about 100 years of combined experience in this industry, but there's only two people listed on their website. One of them is Kurt Williams, who's the chief executive officer and co-founder. Everything on him checks out. I think he's the real deal. Scott Stellman, the chief investment officer. That's where he and Jeff Badger seem like bros from another hoe.
Whoa.
Yeah, so where do we start? Okay, 100 plus years of combined experience. However, according to the Utah Secretary of State, Trestle Financial was only formed in 2023. Okay, yeah, sure.
Yep.
Could just be a new company, right? Let's see. Scott Stelman's experience. Let's talk a little bit about that because there's not much on the internet about him other than his LinkedIn and his Facebook for Trestle Financial. But if you look him up, you find out that his previous business was a custom home company. And boy, oh boy, this reeks of Jeff Badger all over again because he was a custom home builder as well that didn't pay his vendors. And let's see, his Google reviews for Stelman Custom Builders, I believe it is. Stelman Custom Homes, all five of them that are still up. Four of them are bad. And one of them literally says, quote unquote, "This business robs Peter to pay Paul."
Nice.
That was 1 year ago. Wow. 1 year ago, after Trestle Financial had already been founded. We had our basement finished and later ended up getting a lien placed on our home for a bill we paid directly to them that they never paid to the vendor until we confronted them and demanded the amount to be paid. The only time the contractor actually came to our home to check on the project was when he was coming to collect a payment. Yeah. Can't seem to get paid for the work we did for them. Terrible experience. Yeah. So that's his most recent business and investment expertise that qualifies him to lead this multi-$100 million funding project for this multi-campus luxury man cave conglomerate.
Allstate, this is not.
Let's see. Stelman's companies are registered to 460 East 200 North in Springville, Utah, which is an 1,100 square foot box.
Nice.
Small home.
Big box.
No, small.
Oh, small box.
For a house.
Oh, okay.
Now, again, nothing wrong with a humble abode, right? Fine. But when you bill yourself as a custom home builder with 40 years experience, unless you're like Warren Buffett, it's highly unlikely that you wouldn't flaunt it just a wee bit. Right?
Yeah, just a little.
Yeah, you. If not you, your wife might say, "Hey, let's live in a house that's kind of like the homes you build." Yeah, it's this tiny little box. Now, the argument could also be made that he's a property investor, right? So smart money. Smart, wealthy people don't register stuff to their main residence, right?
Yeah.
That anything that could be public, right? They have all these layers of protection. Okay, well, his wife, Jill, is registered in the county as the owner of this property, and neither he nor his wife own any other property in that county or Salt Lake County, which is the two largest counties in Utah and neighboring. Nice. So, like, hey, if you're going to be a property investor, probably that's where it'd be. So, yeah, this guy doesn't seem to have been successful in the past, but now he wants you to think that he's got all this experience and hand you his money.
Because he's going to do great things.
Yeah. The minimum investment, by the way, is approximately the value of his home.
Oh, the box?
Yes.
Nice.
Which is interesting because on the website, they're all like, click here to find out, to apply, to see if you're accredited, to see if you qualify to invest.
Yeah, and
right?
Isn't
so
it
they're
like,
trying to make it exclusive. Scott Stelman would not qualify to invest in his own project based on the information I'm finding.
Whew.
I feel like I need a lawyer by my side for this one.
Don't worry, Ethan will be over here to smack you over the head with a mic.
Did you book a call with them?
No.
That's a big CTA on their website here is book a call.
Oh. No, I don't need to hear from people like this because they're just going to give me a pitch. They're going to give me all their lines. That's what Jeff Badger did. He had an answer for everything. Okay. Again, don't want to make... there's a saying saved in my phone that I'm going to pull up right now because I feel like this is important to the criticism that I'm levying upon this guy. Don't despise small beginnings. Mm. I 100% believe in that statement. I started with nothing. However, it's a big bunch of red flags when you're getting an investment pitch from somebody who claims to have all this experience and success, and you're talking about these kinds of sums of money, and their background is suspect, right? Like, they don't have a verified track record. Money is the validation in business that you are good at what you do.
Well, and I think without even talking about this situation specifically, if you are, when you don't have the background to back it up, to make people comfortable, you know, investing that amount of money because of your prior success, you have to start smaller. There is so many things, all the clout chasing and everything else that we talk about is specifically even just in cars, at Cars and Coffee. Everybody wants to just immediately get to the end.
Correct.
Immediately get to all the success without doing anything to prove that you can handle it.
Correct. And that's also how I responded to the critics when I was making fun of these truckers that are haggard equipment shipping Lamborghinis. Well, he's just trying to make a living. Okay, great.
Don't ship Lamborghinis.
Yes. Take your haggard equipment and go ship Hondas.
Yes.
Right? If you have a rusty, leaky lawnmower, don't try to mow the lawn of the Biltmore estate.
100%. Right?
So, like, work your way up. I did the same thing. No, I didn't. I was brokering Maseratis and Range Rovers right off the bat, but I wasn't buying them. I was not trying to buy them. Okay. Hindsight, I would have not done it that way, but whatever. Here we are. Okay. Here's the biggest red flag. One of their SEC filings, I did not find all of them, or maybe this was the only one, but here is an SEC filing. And again, I'm not an M&A expert, whatever, so this may be how things usually work, but to me, as a accredited investor, this was concerning. Okay. SEC filing, Form D, name of issuer, Trestle Financial LLC, also Passion Capital Partners LLC at the same address. I probably should have looked them up. Let's see, Kurt Williams, the CEO, is listed on here, as well as Scott Stellman. Again, Kurt Williams, everything checks out. He's got a real resume, lives in a $2 million house in Utah. So my theory is that he might be the first victim of Scott Stellman's ability to sell. he may exit from this sooner than later, or maybe not. I don't know. I'm just making observations and guesses. All right. So this is a pooled investment fund. And let's see, the issuer size, they said decline to disclose. Type of filing, new notice, first sale yet to occur. So they have not raised any money. This is the first sale, according to this SEC filing, made in 2024. I believe this was. Yet on their website, they say that $40 million has already been raised.
Oof, where's it?
$40 million already committed. Committed. That could be anything.
Yeah, committed from where? Your mom?
I'll give them a letter of intent for $40 million. Well, that could be too. People said, okay, when you build the first one, I'll do $40 million. It could be a contingency commitment. Contingent commitment. Sorry. Let's see. This gets good. Wait for it. Okay, minimum investment accepted from any outside investor, $250,000.
Whoa, that's a lot of dough.
Total offering amount, $20 million. Use of proceeds.
Here we go.
Right, because we know they're raising money, right? This entire ad, this is not new. They wouldn't deny that they're trying to raise capital. The question is, where's it going? 16, use of proceeds. Provide the amount. It's reading word for word from the SEC filing. Provide the amount of the gross proceeds of the offering that has been or is proposed to be used for payments to any of the persons required to be named as executive officers, directors, or promoters in response to item 3 above. Would you like a guess, Tyler, at what that dollar amount is?
Is it the full dollar amount?
It is!
Whoa!
Ding, 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 ding. $20 million.
Interesting.
Yes. Clarification of response if necessary. Quote, Trestle Financial is raising capital to support the operational expansion and strategic needs of its portfolio companies and developments by offering a stake of ownership in the general partner.
Hmm.
Sounds real fishy to me.
Something doesn't smell right.
There might be some people that wear suits and work on the 44th floor that'll be like, no, that's boilerplate. That's how they always do it. But sorry, it layman just, here, it reads a little weird. Podcast, doesn't smell right to me.
Just doesn't feel right.
$20 million use of proceeds goes to the officers.
Yeah.
Capital to support the operational expansion strategic needs of its portfolio companies. Which ones?
Yes. It's so Which vague. Ones?
You got a landing website for one of them. Like, how much money do you need for that?
Ugh.
This is probably a $500 website. Oh my gosh.
You know what also doesn't sit right? I'm going to let you take a drink for a second. I went through, and we can come back to your train of thought. I went through their Facebook, all of it, every single post from the 2023 up until, well, November 24. They stopped posting there because I don't think it got them anything. Everything just feels like a poorly written ad or like they're hashtags filled with things to try to get people to engage. And there is zero engagement other than on one post. Gearhead Grotto from July 14th, 2023. Another, and I'm going to read this verbatim. The capitalization's wonky too. Another of our team members enjoying a limited edition Sweet Ride ellipses. 2015 Jag XKR convertible. This was the last model year for the XK line. Another ellipses. Kurt Williams commented. The only time somebody commented on Facebook and says this was a great Cal commuter car, but now I'm looking for a fun daily driver I can take to the track. Any recommendations? Gearhead Grotto responds with Aston Martin Diablo.
What?
Which doesn't exist.
Wait, what? Seriously?
No punctuation. Aston Martin Diablo. So did he respond to himself? Was this the other guy? Who was doing like? And there's so much AI and just like trash. It's all garbage.
I had a theory that Kurt Williams was either made up or like had his identity stolen for this thing.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, it seems suspect that somebody this legitimate would get involved with somebody that appears to be that illegitimate.
Yeah.
Right. Now maybe Scott played to Kurt's ego and said, oh, well, you're going to be CEO. So you get the main title or whatever, who knows? I mean, it is an interesting pitch, right? Every car guy with money wants to be a part of something like this, right? And it's a brick and mortar thing. So you think like, oh yeah, well, I can see it being built, whatever. I've seen more pitches for projects like this in Ohio in the last 3 years that have never materialized to anything than, I
stopped believing in the rumors because I was like, oh, that would be kind of sweet if it would like if it could be comparable to what I spend now, like on an apartment, that would be sick to just like have space.
The crazy thing is the people that do it don't really talk about it because they typically either self-fund or they have a group of investors already and they just go out and build it and they don't advertise on Facebook. I mean, listen, I don't think anybody seeing the ads or listening to this is in danger of investing in Trestle Financial or Gearhead Grotto, right? We're not saving anybody. This is just fun to talk about.
You tell me Warren Buffett doesn't invest based on Facebook ads? What? I've been doing this all wrong. I gotta make some phone calls.
Take our 60-second quiz to see if you qualify and get instant access to our pitch deck. Are you an accredited investor? One of the checkboxes is my net worth is over $1 million, excluding primary residence.
Well, it's like they...
Sorry, Scott, I don't think you qualify.
But it's like they've built up this whole thing to feel exclusive and to pump people up and say, oh yeah, I can be a part of this. This is crazy. But like, it looks like as a layman who doesn't have that kind of money, that this feels just like such obvious pandering and just like fakeness. I don't want to say like this is a real company, the group, but it feels just the AI art and the bad grammar and punctuation and all the hat. It just it oozes this discomfort.
Trusted team of providers for operational excellence and compliance. Industry leading service providers ensuring smooth operations, regulatory compliance, and secure financial management for investors. And they have five logos, including JP Morgan and Wells Fargo.
I don't think does any of that mean?
Probably just that they have bank accounts there.
Holy moly. What does any of this mean?
That's a valid question.
It all makes as much sense as Aston Martin Diablo. Oh, boy.
Right, like... Half of this didn't need to be said, because if you see an ad for investment opportunities on Facebook, you should just know right off the bat that that's enough you need to know to not invest. However, if you want my track record on calling out people like this too early, just look up Jeff Badger, G-E-O-F-F Badger, and Club Motor Estates. I was calling that way before it happened. I nailed every single thing. And again, all of this is my opinion. So
I wonder, I'm not discounting anything you said, but I wonder how much it matters, because I also went to their Instagram page, which they're much more active on.
Oh yeah.
They get less than five views on every single, or less than five likes on every single reel that they post. And it's all just rehashing the same verbiage and buzzwords and fluff. It is just like going nowhere. There's no comments, no engagement. There's nothing. Is anybody even seeing this?
That's the problem. Is I feel like I spent all this energy calling out something that didn't need to be called out because nobody's aware of it anyway. But the fact that this Kirk guy is involved, I'm like, that's a real guy with experience. So
I spent way too much time scrolling through these social media pages.
I was really hoping that Scott faked Kurt's, like,
that
just stole
a
picture and all that. But Kurt's LinkedIn page says he's a CEO of Trestle Financial. Plus he has all this other background that's legit. So I think that's legit. That would have been the nice nail in the coffin there, but not to be. All right, let's move on to the Corvette curmudgeon / shrewd negotiator, both and think selling Corvettes is hard. Try selling Corvette parts. I've got a set of Speedline Corvette ZR1 wheels on Facebook Marketplace, and the buyer messaged me, Larry, good Corvette name.
Nice.
Do you know any history on them? Wheels.
A history?
Wheels. So I responded, only three owners, never seen rain, were mounted on a one-of-one Corvette that won 17 trophies, always hand-washed, never been driven over 150 miles an hour.
So good.
Sorry for all the questions, but I want to make sure. I'm going to put them on my 2013 427 convertible Corvette. Mike.
They always got to tell you the year and the, like, this is what I drive, so I'm real. I'm a part of this.
Yeah. So I just said, like, I mean, the wheels are perfect. Like, we can put them on a balancer. You can come see them, whatever you want. Like, they're takeoffs from a ZR1, but wheels don't come with a Carfax report. And he said, yes, I understand that, but I figured you may have some info on the wheels and ZR1 that they came off of. I wasn't being funny with you at all. For the amount of money that I'm spending, I want to make sure I get the best. That's all. And I'm like, then come look at them. What does it matter what car they were on? You're not buying the car. You're buying the friggin' wheels.
Yeah. Did the owner take care of his Corvette?
like they might have been taken off at 2 miles and.
Yeah.
Like, it's irrelevant. Come look at the dang wheels.
Either way, they don't look as good as those yellow C5 pace car wheels. I'll tell you what. Whoo!
This episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All-Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine. Get yours at SheffieldWatches.com and mention that you heard about them on Switchcast. I've complained about emissions lots. No. I haven't complained about emissions. I've complained about emissions regulations.
Ah, yes. Okay. I'm on board.
I do complain about some emissions, the smelly ones by my dog and other people in this household who shall remain unnamed, but
whoa, don't talk about Ethan like that. Come on, play nice.
but there's a new bill being proposed in California, and it's actually nicknamed Leno's Law because Jay Leno fully endorses it. This would be groundbreaking if it actually passes. This is courtesy of Haggerty.com. New bill would exempt California classics from smog checks. So a Republican from Bakersfield has proposed this law, and it would amend the state's very stringent smog rules, which are probably the most strict of like almost anywhere in the world other than maybe yes. like London.
It's kind of, I kind of forgot about it until all the auction websites started putting up it's your responsibility to see if this can be registered in California. It's
yes.
like, it doesn't,
yeah,
we don't
crazy.
Do that.
It's crazy. If passed into law, California Senate Bill 712 would quote, fully exempt any vehicle that was made at least 35 years ago, if it were insured as a collector vehicle. Now, I got editorial comments already. I feel like if you own a car more than 35 years old, you don't need to insure it as a collector vehicle. Like, odds are you're not going to put that many miles on it. If you are, it's going to be a Toyota, which is going to be fully emissions compliant and not pollutive anyway.
Well, and I think, so the original rules were for the smog that LA was, I think LA made, but California in general was experiencing, mm-hmm. which is obviously terrible. When everybody's driving cars that inefficient, and to your point that you just said, you know, they're not going to drive them very much, but also from a like carbon footprint perspective, it's gone. It's like, it is better to drive something like that than it is a new car. From like an environmental perspective, maybe not from smog necessarily,
it's paid
but
for itself,
it's paid for itself. You're not adding, other than the fuel you put into it, any additional impacts, I guess. So I have never understood this hatred for old cars from this perspective. Like, they might be less safe. They might, you know,
but that only affects a person driving.
Correct.
It. That's a personal choice.
Yes, correct. So like, this is always, this feels so common sense to me. That I'm going to be, but I'm also not going to be surprised if it doesn't pass.
It will 100% not pass. I'm saying right now, this will not pass. But it makes so much sense. Leno is quoted as saying that California smog check laws for classic cars need to be updated. They vary too much from state to state, and California's rules don't match up with neighboring ones. Now, I don't think that's why they need to be updated. They're just insane. Like, if you have a 1976 Porsche, because I think it's 75 and earlier is the ones that are exempt from smog, because they're really, like, there was no smog equipment on cars that old for the most part. But you have a 1976 Porsche, it has to pass their incredibly stringent tests. And I'm like, I'm not even sure they would have passed in 1976.
Yeah, seriously.
But each of California's neighboring states, this article says, Oregon, Nevada, and Arizona has a different set of standards when it comes to smogging classics. And some of those are also quite stringent. Portland, Oregon exempts vehicles with a model year of 1975 or older, which is like, no kidding. Medford exempts those 21 years or older. But yet the federal EPA exempts any car 21 years or older.
I think that makes, I think you should reasonably be able to expect that a car in that time frame can still align with relatively modern emission standards.
Absolutely. And like, again, you've already paid for your carbon footprint or whatever with cars that old. So yeah. But if that isn't enough, like at least do like Ohio has, where they have collector plates and historical plates, which say, well, your car is not a daily driver. So it doesn't matter what year it is, if it's special and you're only putting a certain number of miles a year on it, we don't require you to get emissions tests because they recognize, well, by the math, that it's an absolute drop in the bucket of the total overall emissions footprint.
Yes.
Of all the cars, right? Like we need to worry about daily drivers. If we believe, you know, assuming that we believe that cars are a significant contributor to overall global emissions compared to like China's manufacturing and, you know, ships and diesel trains and all sorts of stuff like that. And if we believe that humans can even like fix that, you know, global warming and all that by like putting catalytic converters on their cars, that's a different discussion. But let's just assume that we're all on the same page about the fact that Ferraris are, you know, melting the ice caps.
I think that's what bothers me about a lot of things focused on enthusiast cars is it's never it. We as car enthusiasts and the cars that we own are such a small percentage of the overall miles, tailpipe emissions, whatever you want to call it, that happens in a year compared to literally anything else. So like, leave us alone, please. Let us like enjoy stuff.
Yeah.
Like, cause we're not.
Let us take the catalytic converters off of our car. My 1998 Corvette, right? It's now emissions exempt in Ohio. But yet the law still states that I can't modify the emissions equipment, right? Like if you go by the letter of the law. But I'm like, we did our mileage calculation on all our cars. Yes. On a different episode. I think I put like 500 miles on the car last year.
Which is
I could
what?
Like be pouring oil out of the engine and not hurting the environment based on that little mileage.
Yeah. Like that's what, 2 tanks of gas? If that, like, yeah. How many barrels does the U.S. go through in a day?
Right.
Like, you know, it's just wild. And let us just have fun. That's all I want.
Yeah. Yeah. Another quote by Jay, and this is good. He said, California's rich classic car culture, sparked by the post-war hot rod boom and boosted by Hollywood's love for chrome and horsepower, has made it a paradise for enthusiasts. And that's so true. Like California is an incredible car culture. And back to what you said about the auctions, having this disclosure about you need to make sure you can register it in California. It is really crazy what can and can't be pragmatically registered in California. Any European or JDM import and a lot of Canadian imports cannot be registered there. And it doesn't matter. They could pass smog. But they just have these rules that make it nearly impossible to register anything modified, anything imported. It doesn't matter if your modifications made the car more friendly to the environment. It's just not factory correct. So it's a big, big part of the collector car market. There's a lot of money out there. There's a very rich car culture. But California is making it nearly impossible to, I guess, enjoy cars. And a lot of people are registering their cars in Montana and driving them in California. Yeah. Not because they want to get around the 9-10% sales tax. I mean, maybe that's a side benefit, but because they just like, well, I can't have it at all unless I register it in Montana. Which again goes back to people label me as a libertarian or whatever. But the pragmatic side of me, the logical side says, if laws are too restrictive, people will find a way around them. If they're less restrictive, then people will just obey them. So like you talk about taxes, right? If taxes are reasonable, if it's easier to pay them than to circumvent them, then people will pay them. Same thing with emissions laws. If they're reasonable, people will register their cars in California. And California will probably make a whole ton of money up on all the sales tax they're missing out on by people in their Montana LLCs.
Well, and obviously we can't assume that 100% of those people are suddenly going to start paying sales tax. Like that's not, but even if 50% of them do, because it's easier.
A lot of them will, because it's like, easier.
So much money that the state can use for literally what, like,
yes, more transactions will happen.
Yes.
But instead people are going, well, I'm going to have my car here anyway, I'm just going to register it, quote unquote, theoretically illegally in Montana.
Yeah.
So like the cars are still there. They're still polluting. California just doesn't know about them. So
they don't get any of the benefits.
Yeah.
What is interesting is I found they tried to do this before. There was a law passed in, I believe, 1998 that said by 2004, it would be a rolling 30-year window. And in 2004, they signed another bill into law removing that and enshrining the pre-1976 or whatever rule that we have today. And I tried to find, it's oddly very difficult to find stuff from, you know, 15 years ago, or at this point, 20 years ago on the internet, archives of discussions and why. Mm-hmm. And I found some Pelican Parts forums, but people are just yelling about it. There was no like reasons why this happened, but like they tried, it was in the law to start happening. And enough people lobbied, or some group was interested enough in kiboshing this whole thing, that it was then removed from the law.
Well, let's hope that what we believe about government is true, that they care more about money than the causes that they claim to care about. And so this law will actually pass because they recognize the increased revenue that the state will get, because it is not going to change the amount of ice at the North Pole.
If anybody wants to look it up, it's Assembly Bill 2683 from 2004. I couldn't find much, so good luck.
There you go. I mean, Ohio did away with the front license plates after like four or five different attempts.
Goodness.
So there is hope. There is hope for the world. Props and Flops, brought to you by Switch Cars.
And Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. Find more information online at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in beautiful, because it was beautiful today, Twinsburg, Ohio. Doug, what is the pick of the week from Switch Cars inventory?
We took like 7 deposits on cars in the last 48 hours, so I don't even know what we still have for sale. So there.
Good business.
I don't know
good
what
business
will be sold for sale when we air this podcast. So just go to our website and see what's there.
Somebody put a deposit on a pace car, please.
Our flop of the week this week. I'm trying not to hate on this too much because I feel like a Porsche curmudgeon, but I'm a little bit of one. On Instagram, Porsche of Monterey posted a 997 GT3 that was covered in tree sap and associated garbage from the outdoors, and it was roped off inside their showroom because barn finds are the new craze. But they're restoring it for the Porsche Restoration Challenge, which, if you don't know, is Porsche dealers buy a car, typically not an old car, but a newer car. But by newer, I mean like 30 or less years old. And they put it through their service department and put it all back to original, and or sometimes they do like OEM plus modifications, and they have this challenge and they get judged and there's awards and stuff. And it's a big publicity thing. So that's what they're restoring for the restoration challenge.
Can this be considered a restoration?
Well, it's kind of
funny. Can't they just
funny
like squirt it off?
Because
change the oil.
Yeah, right. That's what I said. That's it. You ruined it. But yes, that was the prevailing opinion. They said in their post, oh man, this year's masterpiece is a dealership favorite, a virtually abandoned 2007 911 GT3. It was parked under a local Monterey pine where it's collected every ounce of sap and pine needle the tree had to offer. The Porsche Monterey service team has their work cut out. I'm like, that just changed the fluids and detail it, man. It's a Metzger GT3. Like,
it'll be fine.
You probably drove it in.
Ugh.
You don't have your work cut out.
I just feel like this, like everything, just got kind of, got a little ruined for the clout. I used to love these challenges because Porsche North Olmsted, a local Porsche dealer, did a 996 a couple of years ago that actually was like kind of problematic, and they fixed it up and it was gorgeous and they had some OEM plus bits. Like, it was really cool. This just feels like they want to say that they're participating with the GT3.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think it's kind of a sappy story, if you ask me.
Oh, ew.
The car was also covered in needles, unlike the mint green homeless GT3 that we've talked about, which was filled with needles.
I'm out. Yikes.
Our prop of the week this week is an auction from Bring a Trailer from one of our competitors, but a worthy competitor. 911R Bring a Trailer Handle Avant Garde out in Oregon. 97 Dodge Viper GTS, which of course, well, not of course, but it is blue with white stripes. And, you know, the internet always says, and we've said, and it is always true, that mods do not increase value. However, this car broke that rule. It has a set of gold Ford Star wheels, BC Racing coilovers, updated headlights. It has the side pipe conversion that the Viper RT10s had instead of the pipes going out the rear. And the stance is absolutely amazing. It got rid of that like friggin' two fist wheel gap that the stock Vipers had. And this thing looks awesome. And it sold for 77 grand, which is about 20 grand more than a comparable stock GTS sold for like last week. So,
holy moly.
People saw the presentation on this, the way the mods that were done. I was tempted to bid on it. It was awesome. Really, really well done by both the seller and the owner who performed all these modifications. Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.